least electronics isn't as bad as feedback, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
And then embedded is really nice.
Yeah, and then embedded is really nice. Yeah, that's right. What can I say? Any Kurt class is really nice.
You know, I think he purposefully teaches the classes that are easier, though.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
You could
but he does well with those classes, so, I mean, you know, I think it's a good thing.
I learned a lot in digital logic and feedback.
Yeah.
I think he teaches the ones that he's good at.
Oh, yeah, he is good at those. Yep, it's a good thing. Okay, so last day, you remember that current source that we came up with, right?
Can I have a quick recap?
Yep, it could be right here. I'll just say, let me just go down here. This is the homework here. So here was my favorite current source, okay? And here was the one we came up with, you know? I think this is kind of cool, you know? I like coming up with new circuits, right? So, you know? We just had this idea and said, shoot, if they could do it with their Wilson or their current mirror, do that. Wilson could do that with the current mirror. We could do that with our favorite thing, right? So at this point, you know, this is a new circuit. I've never, you know, seen this circuit before, and I think it should work, right? But we should simulate it to see if it really does work, right? Don't you think? And compare it to this guy. You see, there's that nice graph in the book, right? That shows you that had the things swapped, right? Remember? Figure whatever it was, fix 718. So for our favorite current source, its new brother. Simulate them. I get the wrong pin here. This is feeling like some work for the beans. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to look at this current source right here. This one we dreamed up, and this, you know, the favorite one. Compare those two, put those two, build them in SPICE or QUCS, you know, whichever you like, whatever program you like to use. And then we want to basically what we want to do is we want to put a load resistor in here, like that, and sweep that load resistor. And if you're using SPICE, you use the search for R mod or that thing. Remember, we showed you how you could change the resistor values in SPICE. You have to use one of those SPICE directives to do that.
To do the sweep.
And QUCS has a similar kind of a thing, you know, where you can do sweeps. You'll have to do a Googling on how to do that. I have to, every time I do it, I forget, you know. So, yeah. So anyway, you know, whatever program you like, but we want to sweep this resistor right here. And what that does is basically we're going to have an IV relationship for this point, this load right here, right? And we would like it to be, you know, just flat like this on the I-axis here, the V-axis here, you know, just. But of course, it's going to come up and it's not going to work until it gets to about, well, on this guy, it'll work at about 1.4 volts. This guy, I'm assuming it'll work at about 2.1 volts, you know, it'll start working at 2.1 volts, and, you know, we could go VCC up to, I don't know, maybe whatever they do, I don't know, in the book or something, whatever you like. I mean, it'd be nice to see that, right? So that will be a good thing you can do for me, so now I'll know whether this, you know, thing we invented was any good, right? I mean, it has a disadvantage, this 2.1 volts, we can already see that, right? That was the same disadvantage, you know, we added another 0.7 over here, right? But, you know, the advantage of having a higher R Norton, actually, you don't understand why that would be so great. I could tell you why that would be so great, but then we'd have probably skip getting into fats. I don't know, maybe I should, but that's actually more further down the log. I think the book uses this, you know, when they talk about differential pairs. But having a current source with a high Norton resistance, you can imagine if I was using this current source as the load, as the RC resistor and a common emitter amplifier, then that gives me a good gain, right? And if the Norton resistance of that thing is really high, that gives me a really good gain, okay? So, you know, maybe you can see just from that that having a really high Norton resistance on a current source is a very nice thing. Because, it, you know, if you imagine the problems you're having with your lab, right? If that RC, instead of making that RC a resistor, if it was a current source, all your problems would go away with saturation. You wouldn't have that problem, right? You could have a gigantic gain, you know, without having this IC-RC drop that killed you, right? That made that transistor go into saturation. So, you know, putting a current source in there is a great thing to do. And they do that kind of stuff, you know, repeatedly in integrated circuits. Because transistors are cheap in integrated circuits and resistors are expensive. Like a 6 megohm resistor like you guys were using. Oh man, I don't even know if you could make an integrated circuit big enough to fit that, you know? So, anyway. Any questions on your homework?
I kind of have a question on the first one. I mean, I think I have my equations and stuff, but...
So you're doing this load line thing.
Yeah.
How many of you guys did the homework and understood the load line stuff? I know you did.
It's pretty similar to the example in the book.
Okay, here, let me go do a quick aside to get Ted going on this. Here's the IV characteristic for VBE and IBE. This book is actually a good book, you guys.
Yeah, I looked around some, but I didn't
see
this one. Oh, I see, that's
it. Oops, I need to put a resistor in here. I can quickly give you a rundown here. This is actually a very valuable technique here.
That's kind of like that. But, let's see, do you have to determine the beta yourself on this problem?
Yeah, it's right off the graph, or you really don't even need to use it. You just use the graph. So here's VBE, IB, and here's the VCE versus IC. Now, what we're going to do is I'm going to turn off the AC source. You know, this is little VN here, and this is VBB here. Okay, so this is the base source, you know, bias source. This is the collector bias source, and we've got RB here. So if I turn off VN, then there's a Thevenin circuit right here that's this RB and VBB, right? And so I can write a little loop equation around there. You know, here's IB going in like this. And this, of course, is VBE, right? So it's kind of like a Thevenin thing with VBE being the Thevenin, or the output voltage, and IB being the output current of the Thevenin. So if I just go around this loop, it says minus minus VBB, minus VBB plus RBIB plus VBE equals zero, okay? And this is a equation for a line on this graph right over here, right? It's just an equation for the line here. And IB is the y equals mx plus b. You can see if I put IB and VBE equal to zero, well, that's not going to be on the line. I guess if I put IB equal to zero, VBE will be VBB. So here you can see this is VBB here. Right there. And if I put VBE to zero, then I get IB equals VBB over RB. So this is VBB over RB. And the slope coming down here is minus 1 over RB. You can, you know, you could solve this for IB equals, what is it? It's, bring IB over here, so it's going to be, bring VB, so it's going to be minus 1 over RB times VBE plus VBB over RB. So this is the y-intercept, you know, this is the B term, and this is the M term. And this is the x, and this is the y. Y equals mx plus b kind of thing, right? So there's the line. Now, here's what happens. This is what we call the Q point right there, right? And so what's going to happen to you when you turn on this little b in here, right? Well, that's like changing this BBB by a little bit, right? So this guy goes back and forth like this, this line. It just goes, you know, what you're really kind of, it keeps the same slope because the RB is the same, but, you know, it's like, you know, you're pushing the thing back and forth like that by moving this back and forth, right? By moving your VBB back and forth. So it moves this up and down like that. So what happens then? Well, you can see the IB goes up and down here, right? Well, then you come over here to this graph. Here's the, this is when IB equals zero. And then we have another one here. Now IB equals whatever. You know, I just call it IB1 here, or just I'll just call it IB1. And then 2IB1 and so on, right? So this is about 2IB1 and so now let's do the same kind of thing on the output circuit. You know, see this is VCE. And this right here is IC. Right? So we can write the same kind of thing here. I've got, you know, minus VCC plus RC IC plus VCE equals zero, right? That's the same kind of equation that is. So it goes like this, right? And this is VCC, and the slope is minus 1 over RC, and this guy is VCC over RC, right? And now what happens when you move this guy back and forth by changing this guy right here, moves that guy back and forth? Well, it moves from like this curve right here, this might be one, you know, up toward that one right there, right? So you're moved along here by jumping from, you know, different IBs, right? And as you change your IBs, you're moving along this line right here, right? So as you move along that line right there, then BCE changes back and forth like this, right? And BCE is your output voltage. This is V out, right? So you can see now you have an amplifier, right?
Okay. So I just need to, I have the equation, but I just need to relate them to the
graph. Yeah, just put them on the graphs, yeah. This thing right here, these two lines right here, this line right here and that line, right there, those two lines are known as load lines. And basically the idea is you took the linear part of the circuit and you graphed it on here, and you had the nonlinear part of the circuit and you hooked them together so that the intersection of the two, curves is the solution, right? So you're graphically solving this thing, and you're taking the nonlinear part of the thing, you know, and let the graph do the solution for you, right? And you understand this nice linear part here. That's, you know, just regular R's and C's and voltage sources, right? That's like our old-fashioned circuit stuff. So that load line method is a very handy method of solving these things, and graphically it gives you a nice picture for what you see there. So anyway, if you haven't got the homework done, then that should help you. Hopefully. And like Trent said, there's a nice write-up in the book. And I think McKenzie also went to MIT OpenCourseWare and he looked and found some nice video there, right? So. Okay, so anyway, today what we need to look at is junction field effect transistors. you got your new phone with a new OS.
He just got a new case for it, yeah. It's the same case that I have.
Same phone. Brand, yeah.
So that's so that you drop it, it's still okay, huh?
Yeah.
It bounces even, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
It's get rubber.
Silicone
rubber
and then hard plastic around there.
Too fancy.
Well, yeah, well, especially when your phone is $100 or something, you
yeah.
know.
$250.
$250, yeah, right, okay, so $250, yeah.
And out of, if you broke it and had to buy one out of contract, they're like $700.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, mine was only like $50, but out of contract's probably around $750.
Whoa, Jack.
Yeah.
Man alive, yeah. So, here, me and my $100 computer, and you guys have $700 phones, right? Incredible. Yeah. I guess when you squish this down to the size of a phone, it gets expensive, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, well, maybe before we start, I should say a little bit about field effect transistors in general. See, field effect transistors are actually the most common transistor in use these days. They're the ones that are all in your little processors, you know. They're just ubiquitous. They weren't like the first ones to be invented, but as time has gone on, they've become like the favorite transistor of all the IC people, okay? And they're actually not bad for discrete circuits either. I mean, they're really good for a lot of that kind of stuff too. And power supply designers really like field effect transistors, as, you know, as long as it depends on what range of voltages and currents you're in, but, you know, for stuff that's probably in the order of mostly what you'd be doing for your home kind of stuff, you know, things that's not like, I'm not talking, you know, kilovolts or big amperes either, you know, then field effect transistors are wonderful, you know. They're just great for that.
They're not linear. Is that right?
No, they're not linear. They're not, yeah, right. So we have some difficulties. They distort the signal more than well, I don't know if I should say more. You see, the problem is, if you had a current drive for this transistor, it would be very linear, okay? If you're putting current in. So if you're driving this thing with a high Norton impedance source, this guy will be a wonderful linear device, okay? But if you're driving it with a voltage, as we were in this example, it's not linear because the IV characteristic on the diode, base emitter junction is horrible, right? So, you know, we're going to have the same non-linear effect actually, there is another really nice thing about field effect transistors, and here, what you really wish was that you didn't have, you know, if you wanted to drive this with a voltage, right, you'd really like a high impedance input, right? So this BJT is like ideal for a current drive, but if you wanted a voltage drive, you would want something that drew no current from your supply, right? And field effect transistors are basically that way. So in some ways, they're wonderful on the input side as well. The output side, however, is nonlinear, like Ted was mentioning. So let's look and see if we can understand how these works. And the first kind of field effect transistor I want to talk about is the junction field effect transistor. The reason I do this one first is I think it's a little bit easier to understand when you look at this thing. Starting with this kind of transistor, I think it's easier to understand. And these guys, actually, junction field effect transistors are getting to be more rare, okay? They are not used in ICs. They're, you can get discrete components, and we use some upstairs. I use these upstairs a whole lot. The reason I use these upstairs is this. I'm dealing with students who are making circuits with these things, right? And me too, you know, and you can run, scuff your feet around on the floor and you can generate a static charge. And on regular field effect transistors, if even a charge you can't feel discharge, you know, when you come up and you touch the doorknob or whatever, it zaps you. If you did that to a field effect transistor of a normal kind, it's toast. It's trash now. No, there's no fixing it, you know, throw it away. But if you did that to a junction field effect transistor, oh, no problem, nothing happened. Okay. So these JFETs are very durable. So that's why I like them in the lab. And, you know, anymore it's not quite as important as it used to be, but it used to be, you know, when you wanted to like change the memory in your computer or some of those kind of things, and it's still a good idea to do this, you would want to discharge yourself before you unscrew the case and all that kind of stuff. It's a very good idea to do that, you know, especially when you're dealing with a $700 phone or something, you know. So nowadays, most of the integrated circuits have some kind of protection circuitry in there to try and save them on all the I/O pins. But if you're dealing with discretes, and you know, it's still a good idea just to be safe on the other stuff. But it used to be it was so easy to zap something.
Actually, the other day I went to plug something into a computer,
mm-hmm.
and I had some static electricity.
Right,
yes,
and you go.
It jumped to the USB port, and
yeah.
the safety mechanism actually just
shut the computer down. Yeah, right.
I've actually fried like 5 or 6 mouses on my laptop.
Really?
Stuff,
yeah, because of the static.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, be careful. it's good to ground yourself before you play with those kind of things. Okay, so how do these things work? Let me draw you a picture here. Just like we did with the BJT, here's a picture. This top part we call the drain. The bottom part we call the source. And this middle part right here, these guys are electrically connected together. This is the gate. So you might actually think about this. If this was a round thing, this would kind of be like a belt going around the gate. You know, see, like my belt here, you know, kind of around the middle. And you know, you can kind of think of this thing as a pipe here. I'm going to draw an N-channel JFET, so this will be N, and this gate region here will be P. Okay, so the P, you can kind of think of it going all the way around this transistor here. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to start off with a voltage here, a small voltage right here. This will be VDS. Okay, if I start out, suppose VDS was small. And I'm going to put in a voltage here. This will be VGS. VGS. And I'm going to let that be less than zero. In other words, I'm going to reverse bias this PN junction right here. So the gate is the lowest potential in this whole circuit. This is the lowest place in the circuit. The lowest height, lowest voltage. This is the next highest, and this up here is the highest voltage. So this is a reverse bias PN junction, and if it's a reverse bias PN junction, what happens right around the place where the P and the N join here? We're going to have a depletion region there, right? Does that make sense? So I'm going to make a depletion region kind of right in here. And if I can draw the same kind of thing over here, this is depletion region. Okay, so if we look at this thing, now what I want to do is think about what happens when I change this VGS and make it more negative than it is already. Okay? If I made it more negative, what would be happening? What happens to that depletion region?
Gets bigger.
gets bigger, right? So this is kind of like in the old days, the ladies had this thing they called a corset, you know, they stuck on the middle, and you know, then the guys would get there and they'd pull on this thing, you know, and it, I can't imagine, must have been a horrible thing. Anyway, you know, they're squeezing in the middle here, right? And so you can kind of see we're squeezing, and this isn't a lady here, this is a pipe, right? And there's actually, this is where we're doing, we're putting electrons through this device like this, right? You got electrons kind of going up the river here, you know? There's all these electrons, right? And these guys are headed that way, right? Does that make sense? And so if you crank this thing up here to negative, you can squeeze that channel right off, right? They call that pinch off, okay? And so this is kind of like a voltage variable resistor. That's kind of a nice device, right? I mean, actually, you know, we could use that, and we do use it this way sometimes, right? A voltage variable resistor, because, you know, the resistance is L over sigma A, right? And the A is getting squished, right? So if we look at this thing, we can kind of make an IV characteristic here. This is VDS, and at this point VDS is small, so I'm kind of over here. You know, if I started out right here, right along the bottom, this would be for VGS equals, maybe I'll put it on the end here. I'm going to need to write VDS along there. I'm just going to kind of, you know, this is right along the bottom. And this is VGS less than or equal to V pinch off. Okay. Oh, let me see. Maybe I should say. Yeah, I guess so. V pinch off is a negative value, you know. So it's VGS. Now, what happens is if we aren't quite pinched off, we'll kind of be like this, right? Actually, I don't want to draw this thing bending over. This is going up like this. And so, you know, these are different VGS values. You know, this would be VGS not quite pinched off, right? VGS a lot more open here. And maybe the last one right here that we'd have, this guy right here would be VGS equals zero. That's the highest we can make VGS, because otherwise then we'd forward bias this PN junction here and it wouldn't be in the range, you know, same region of operation at all. Does that make sense? Okay. And this, of course, I drew this when VDS was small here, and I drew this picture over here where VDS was small. And this is on this graph right here, this top thing here, this is ID I'm graphing here, right? And you can kind of see that, you know, the slope on these guys is going to be, let's see about it here. It's basically, you know, it's like a voltage variable resistor. A resistor would be a graph that was just a line like this, right? Does that make sense? You know, you increase V, it increases I. V equals RI. So the slope of these lines here is kind of like the resistance of this pipe here, right? Is that okay? Okay, now what I want to do now is I'd like to fill in the rest of this graph and see what happens over here, right? So in order to do that, that means I need to increase VDS here, right? So let's, you know, get the rest of this graph and see if we can figure out what would happen here. So if I increase VDS, what's going to happen is the drain to gate voltage is going to be, it's actually, even in this case, I didn't draw this as good as I should have. It really should have been kind of, you know, more out like that. This should be, there should be a bigger depletion region up at the top than there is at the bottom, right? I mean, if VDS was close to zero, they'd be almost the same. But as I increase VDS, what happens is this guy right here gets bigger and bigger, you know, kind of like that, right? You know, maybe I should write this kind of like this. This is increasing So as I increase VDS, you know, it puts these, it pinches off the top more than the bottom. Why is that? Well, because the drain to gate voltage is bigger than the gate to source voltage, right? I mean, this is reverse bias by VGS right here, but this is reverse bias by VGS plus VDS, right? So I'm going to say over here, I can say VGD, I guess is what I want, VGD, V gain to drain, gate to drain, I guess, right? V gain to drain equals VGS plus or minus VDS, right? Minus VDS, right? Gain to drain. Gate to drain, I can't say the right thing. Gain to drain. What is that? So anyway, this voltage is more reverse biased than this one, right? And so what happens as you increase VDS, these guys, what did you expect kind of happen here? Yeah, they're going to bend over us, right? It's just going to go like this, right? So they kind of go like this. Oops, should be a nice continuous thing. Okay. And so they kind of look kind of like that. And then finally, what happens is the top gets pinched off. Okay? So when the top gets pinched off, if the top gets pinched off, what's going to happen? You know, when the it doesn't quite, because you see, if this dropped, then there'd be less current going through there, and actually, there's two competing things that are going on here. You know, when you get the top pinched off, you know, so this is pinched off here. When the top is pinched off, there's two things that are happening. We're making the resistance higher because now it's pinched off, right? So it's harder. There's fewer number of carriers in the pinched off region, and so it's like the resistance is higher. On the other hand, the reason it's pinched off is because we crank this VDS up, right? So when you crank VDS up, it's kind of like more downhill going that direction, right? So there's two competing things happening, and basically, you know, this thing kind of asymptotically heads up to be about flat here. And they kind of go like that, okay? And you can kind of think about this region right here. This is kind of the border between this kind of operation and that kind of operation. And over here, we call this beyond pinch off. Or BPO. And also, unfortunately, there's this other word that they use for it. Don't you hate it when they have several names for the same thing? Well, I do too, but there isn't much we can do about it. It's also known as saturation. And you know what was really disgusting about saturation is there's a saturation when it comes to BJTs, right? And it doesn't mean the same thing. Okay? So, unfortunately, they also have several words over here for this region of operation. They call this ohmic. Now, I kind of like that word because that tells me that it's acting like a resistor, right? Another word they have for this is triode. And that comes because there's kind of like three terminals here, and that actually kind of goes back to a thing they had before transistors called vacuum tubes. Vacuum tubes, you guys ever heard of vacuum tubes? You know, in the old days, they had these tubes which they would evacuate the air out of, and then they'd put little, screens and a heater filament in there and a plate, and they'd put a very high voltage on the plate, and they'd put a low voltage on the heater, which is also called the filament sometimes, and the heater would get hot, and then when it gets hot, it would have some kind of material on there that when it got hot, you know, it's kind of like boiling water. When you boil water, steam comes off, right? Well, if you get the heater hot, then electrons boil off, okay? And then they're in this vacuum, right? And they want to sail toward the positive plate. And then you have a screen in between these two things, and that screen they call the grid. And if you put a negative voltage on the grid, maybe a little negative voltage that you put on there, and make that little negative voltage go up and down, then you can change how much downhill it feels like to all those electrons being boiled off to head toward the plate, right? You know, if you make it go positive, it's like, oh man, let's go. But if they see that screen there, and it's kind of like, you know, there's guys there with machine guns or something, you know, they don't like those, you know, that screen that's repelling them. There's like, you know, more electrons there. It's kind of like, oh, we don't want to go over there, you know. And so not fewer of them go sailing through the screen to the plate. And so then you can, you know, it's basic for an amplifier. That's a triode, a three-element vacuum tube. And this is kind of like that. You know, there's three connections here. And the curve for the triodes kind of looked like this part of the curve for the field effect transistors. And of course, the engineers, when they were developing these field effect transistors, right, they were all familiar with triodes, right? So they said, ah, this is a triode operation. Okay. So you guys, well, nowadays it's kind of like, I'm not even quite sure what a triode is, probably, right? They had other things called tetrodes and pentodes, and those had, you know, more screens in between, which you could do more things with, right? You know, if you had several screens at different spacings, you know, then you can kind of really, you know, fine-tune how that thing works. But the triode was kind of the basic one. The diode is like, you know, it doesn't have a screen in the middle at all. It just has a, you know, positive plate and the filament here. And current would flow, electrons would flow from the filament to the plate, but the plate was not made to burn off, you know, it didn't get hot, or as hot, and, you know, it was still getting hot heat from the filament, maybe, you know, the irradiation there. But it doesn't get as hot, not unless a lot of electrons are hitting it. I mean, when the electrons hit it, then it tends to get hot, you know, current flowing through it. But it would, you know, electrons would flow this direction, but not the backwards direction. That's like a diode, like our semiconductor diode, only this was a vacuum diode, right? So anyway, this is called the triode or ohmic region. And of course, this guy down here, this thing is called the cutoff region. And I guess, you know, that's the same word as in the BJTs, but it's also the same basic idea, right? So I think that's okay. And this only has one name. Isn't that a great thing? So now let's think about, you know, I've drawn you the pictures. We ought to think about the equations that describe these curves here. And I'm not going to derive the equations here, but when you take physical electronics, which you'll take like when you're a senior, then you need to get Tom Eakins, you know, to derive these equations. You know, it's just really cool stuff. But I'll give you kind of the equations now that describe basically in this ohmic region, okay? And if we know what the equations are in the ohmic region, then you can kind of see once it hits the beyond pinch-off or saturation region, it just kind of stays at this value here, right? So we can kind of get the equations over here as well from that, okay? And it turns out that these equations right here are a series of upside-down parabolas, okay? So those are a series of upside-down parabolas, and the point right here where it changes from ohmic to beyond pinch-off right there is kind of like the peak of the parabola. So, you know, if I drew the parabola, it would kind of come down like this, and this would come down like this, and this one would come down like this, right? And this curve going up like there actually turns out to be a parabola as well, okay? So let me write the equations for you here. This is in ohmic, or triode region. ID equals K over 2 times VGS minus VP, that's a P, times VDS minus VDS squared. If I remember right. What's that?
I don't know, this is a bit different.
They have a 2 here and a K in front. I probably want VDS squared. Well, let's see. I'll do it that way then. That's fine. They have their 2
they just have
one K in front, right? Right there, right, okay. I was going to put a VDS squared over 2 here, so basically that's the same, I think. So let's look and see if we understand what this, how this is, these parabolas here. First of all, you kind of see that if I pick a VGS, okay, suppose I pick a VGS here, then this does look like some kind of a squared thing, because you know, this is a VDS squared here, and it's a negative. That means it's going upside down, right? And I've got this term right here, which gives me it moves the center of the curve over, essentially. Basically, is what it is, right? So, I mean, if you plot those, you'll get these kind of guys like this. And I'd like to get this dotted line. The dotted line, how would I find the dotted line? This is the border between ohmic and saturation, or between BPO and ohmic. And how do I get that border? Well, that border occurs when the thing saturates. So that would be when VGD, that would be happen when VGD equals V pinch off, right? That happens, maybe I should put when. Right, that would be right along the border. This is VGD equals V pinch off, right? Right there on that dotted line. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Denver's got a great idea here. Let's see what we get for our border here by substituting in. So VGD is VGS minus VDS. So this is VGS minus VDS. I guess I need to substitute in for VGS, right? So that implies VGS equals, so VGS equals VDS plus VP, right? Is that right? Oops, that should be a big VP. Okay, so I plug that in. So ID along the border, ID, this is the border, ID equals K times 2 times, okay, your VGS is equal to VDS minus or plus VP, then I've got this minus VP right here, and then I've got VDS minus VDS squared, right? Which equals, well, this guy, I've got K times 2, this becomes VDS squared because the VPs cancel, right? So I got 2 VDS squared minus VDS squared, which is just K VDS squared, right? That's what I said. So that's the equation of that border, is K VDS squared, okay? Is that all right? And then the last thing we'd like to do is we'd like to find out what is the equation for the things over here where it's flat, okay? And basically what we then need to do is find out what these guys were at the peak values or at the place where the border occurred, right? So to find ID in GPO region, we use the fact that it is the same as at the border. Okay. So this time we're going to say, you know, we got this guy right here, but instead of substituting in for BGS, I want these curves right here, and they're really a function of BGS. You see, this is like BGS equals BGS1, and this is BGS equals 2 VGS1, right? And this might be VGS equals 3 VGS1, right? Does that make sense? So I want ID over here as a function of VGS. I mean, maybe I should write it like that. I should say ID is a function of VGS, right? ID is a function of VGS. It's not a function of VDS. It's flat over here in terms of VDS, right? It doesn't change, right? So I just want to do this same operation, right? We did right here. And instead, I want to, like here, I substituted in for VGS. I want to solve this guy right here for VDS and substitute in there and there, and I'll get what I need, right? Does that make sense? So I have at the border. So I know VGS equals VDS plus VP, right? So that implies VDS equals VGS minus VP, right? So I'll put that in. So I've got ID equals K times 2 times VGS minus VP times VDS minus VDS squared, and that's going to be equal to K times 2 times VGS minus VP times, I've got a VGS here, minus VP. Oops, and my writing is getting worse by the second here. VGS minus VP. That's that VDS, and then I've got minus VGS. Oops. Well, it probably would have been easier, right, if I had just taken this guy right here and just apply him right in there, right? So this equals K times this thing right here, which is VGS minus VP squared, right? And so notice that this is a squared kind of a thing. So when I double VGS, it squares. You know, if I double VGS minus V pinch off, right, then it'll 4 times the current, right? Does that make sense? So it's not linear. So anyway, next day, you know, we'll look at probably doing the same kind of thing. You know, you can do the same thing we did over there, you know, put a circuit together and have a, you know, put it in a circuit like that. And you can have a load line and all this kind of stuff, right? And you get the same kind of effects, right? We can make a small signal model for it, just like we did for the BJT, right? So, you know, we'll start working on all those things. And you know, just so you think that, you know, well, we're learning about JFETs, I really wanted to learn about MOSFETs, but it turns out MOSFETs have a very similar curve. So, fortunately, they're all kind of very similar. You just learn one and you kind of got most of the rest of it.
Cool.
So.
I think they only use the saturation triode.
Yeah, they only call it triode and saturation. Yeah, okay. So maybe I could just settle on triode and saturation.
But
what's that?
Pinch off.
Oh yeah, pinch off is there. Yeah. Or do they call it cutoff or pinch off? Pinch off, huh?
They go over MOSFETs.
Yeah, in the book, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I guess I should get this picture. Yeah, just try and get it in as soon as you can. You know, my grader for this class is kind of lax. Wow, Katie, did you bring a magnifying glass?
No.
Whoa, Jack.
Probably not even going to use it.
Probably not.
What always happens, I write all this stuff and then...
And then you never need it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, because usually by the time you wrote it all down, you know it, you know.
Right. So did you used to write all that kind of stuff down in the same small script for all my exams? Right, I know. But if you wrote it all down and you just left the sheet at home, you'd know it, right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah,
not a small script, right? Yeah. So you guys have an exam today? Oh boy. Yeah. Well, I noticed people were a little earlier than usual. Yeah. Well, good luck. Yeah, right. Right. I didn't give Delvin any problems on this exam. It should be okay. Oh, it's materials, yeah. Oh, it's a mock test, yeah.